could learn my ABCs, bring home A's instead of D's, and my mom and dad I'd please if I had rhythm in my nursery rhymes. In the corner on a stool, I'd sit, cause I broke a rule, but I'd show them I'm no fool, cause I got rhythm in my nursery rhymes. Tra-la-la-la-la-la won't get me far, lately I've been thinking, if I had a little bit of rhythm, I could be a Washington or a Lincoln. Simple Simon at the fair met a pie man who was there, but those two guys I don't care, cause I got rhythm in my nursery rhyme.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and this month I'm bringing you part two of an exploration of more of the music of transgendered artists, including some special interviews. Starting the show off was Alexandra Billings, an acclaimed actress and singer, and the first transsexual to play a transsexual character on television. I've got a lot more music by her, but first, my regular listeners know how I love to dig into our history and share musical obscurities. First up is Beth Elliott, who besides being a singer, is especially known for her activism in San Francisco in the early 1970s. For example, she was a co-founder of the Alice B. Toklas Lesbian and Gay Democratic Club, and on the board of directors of the California Committee for Sexual Law Reform, and a member of the Daughters of Bilitis. That group was a pioneering lesbian organization during the 1950s and 1960s, but times were changing. The lesbian community was becoming more radical. In 1973, Beth was elected as vice president of the Daughters of Bilitis. Later that year, she was outed as transsexual and hounded out of the organization by transphobic lesbian separatists. You know how they can get. I'm sharing with you a song she wrote in 1970, which you may know was before Olivia Records ever dreamed of a woman-loving woman song. The song is called Lady on the Subway, and in an email, Beth told me it was her way of getting to hear a girl group love song addressed from one woman to another. Specifically, it was inspired by one of her all-time favorites, the song Popsicles, Icicles by the Mermaids. Here's Lady on the Subway.
I don't know where you come from, I don't know your name, but whenever I see you, I get high just the same. Lady, you're lovely and I'm at wit's end, too shy to ask if we can be friends. I'm out on the subway and I see you every day. I get off at Belmont and it takes you away. I go home to my flat and to my evening meal, telling a hamburger how I feel. Lady, I wish we could talk for a while. I looked at you yesterday and you started to smile. I've been making up daydreams in which you are the star. I could see you some more.
That was Lady on the Subway, written in 1970 and recorded in 1976. In 2005, Beth Elliott finally got around to releasing a CD of music spanning her career, and appropriately called it Buried Treasures. It contained one of her most known songs, called The Ballad of the Oklahoma Women's Liberation Front. And you'll quickly see why this one's reserved for the internet version of my show.
Well, if you like sexist music, then country music's the best. The women sing of how men are king and how it's fun to be oppressed. But if you like being a person and not just a country cunt, you'll be proud to hear of how the Sisters of Muskogee formed the Okie Women's Liberation Front. We sent Billie Jo Tucker off to Kansas U. She was our pride and joy. We were hoping she'd be a pom-pom girl and get hitched to some nice boy. But she came back all intellectualized and told us how we were oppressed. Well, Billie Jo got us all pissed off and we all did the rest. There's revolution in the country. Women are to blame. Cause the way the men folk treat us here is really pretty lame. Next time they say they want to screw, we'll say, oh no you don't. We don't crave being private slaves at the Okie Women's Liberation Front. Well, the preachers called us commies and the boozers called us dykes. Knowing whose best interests they had in mind, I thought we'd see what Marxist apple were like. In a women's collective and relate to our sisters as we please. There's a revolution in the country. Sisters stand up tall. When we act halfway intelligent, they worry about their balls. But they better shape up pretty soon, or they're gonna have to bear the brunt of the vengeance that will soon be wreaked by the Okie Women's Liberation Front. Will we fit on a solution that we think is best? Then we're gonna head out west. So truck on down to Bakersfield for women's hoedown sometime. You may have smoked grass and knocked you on your ass, but you've never had our women's moonshine. There's a revolution in the country. Sisters stand up proud. They want us quiet and passive, but we're getting pretty loud. We started out being subtle, but now we're getting blunt. And I'll be sorry that they messed with the Okie Women's Liberation Front. Sisterhood is powerful, y'all.
Yeah! You could hardly get more obscure than this next recording. It's a 45 RPM record that was definitely not affected by any politically correct considerations. It's from Holland from 1974 and has a picture on the record sleeve of the singer, reportedly named Roberto. Both sides of the record were written and produced by Dutch singer Wilfred de Faria. And while Google doesn't know much about him, he looks like Roberto to me. And he does not make a good-looking woman. I guess I might use a different name, too, if I were releasing a song called He, She. Here's Roberto.
I'm a he, she. I'm a he, she. All you've ever seen. But I paid my knees and I paid my lip. I walk high heeled and I wiggle with my hip. Cause I'm a he, she. I'm a he, she. I'm a he, she. Everybody knows it. I'm a he, she. I'm a he, she. My lips, I walk high heeled and I wiggle with my hips.
And I can't resist playing the other side of the record, because, gee, where else would you ever hear it? Its title is I Am What I Am. Of course, being from 1974, it's not related to the song by that title, later made famous from the musical La Cage aux Folles.
I can walk like a lady. I can talk like a lady. Dance like a lady, romance like a lady. I can do everything that you want me to do. I can be just as good as a woman to you. For I am what I am. I'm a man. I can sing like a lady, drink like a lady, talk like a lady, kiss like a lady. I can do everything that you want me to do. I can be just as good as a woman to you. But I am what I am. I'm a man. But a man can hardly be a woman. And a woman can hardly be a man. In this world of today that we live in, I declare, I am sure, yes it can. I can walk like a lady,
walk like a lady,
talk like a lady,
talk like a lady,
dance like a lady,
dance like a lady,
romance like a lady,
romance like a lady.
I can do everything that you want me to do. I can be just as good as a woman to you. For I am what I am. I'm a man. For I am what I am. I'm a man. But I am what I am. I'm a man.
Again, that was Roberto. Okay, I'm anxious to get to my interview with Alexandra Billings, and what a delight she is. She's gotten critical acclaim as an actress on stage, on television, and as a cabaret performer, garnering her a slew of awards. But in the early 1980s, she was a successful female impersonator in the clubs in Chicago, so that's what I ask about first.
When I first started performing, I was in Chicago at a club called Club Victoria, which is now, I believe, a Gap. They've changed into a Gap store. But back then, it was on Belmont, sort of on the north side, and I performed there for about 2 years. And I then moved to La Cage, which was on Wells, I believe Wells, and which was owned by Barbara Eden, of all strange people. So she was sort of my boss for a long time, which was fantastic. I got to work for I Dream of Jeannie, which I loved. And then I sort of moved from club to club, and then I ended up at the Baton for about 4 or 5 years, something like that. And it was great. I loved doing that. I love the art of pantomime, and I really enjoyed the world and the people. I met the best friends I think I've ever had in my life at that time. And still are great friends of mine.
What was your drag name?
Shantae.
And where did you get that?
I got it from the back of an album cover. I don't remember which album it was, but this is back when they were actually making albums. So this was, 1922 or whatever it was. And I got it from the back of an album cover. And I remember the group actually was called Shanti, spelled with an I. So my name for a long time was Shanti. And then I saw it in print once, and it looked like Shanti. And I thought, well, I don't want to look like a house, so I'll change the I to an E. So that's what I did.
Did you do live singing at that time?
I didn't. You know, this was early 1980s, and in the drag world, not nobody, but there were very few girls that were really using their own voice. And it was sort of unheard of at the time. And so, although I wanted to sing, most of the club owners just wanted, you know, impersonations or things like that, and they really didn't want anybody to use their own voice, so I didn't.
Was your voice different then? Some people, when they transition, their voice changes.
Yeah, you know, my voice never really changed. It's always sort of been like this. It's always sort of been weird and ambiguous. I think it's gotten lower as I've gotten older, but it's basically sort of been the same.
And I've read you've won a lot of contests, Miss Wisconsin, Miss New York, Miss Chicago, Illinois, Florida.
Wow, you have been doing your research. Good heavens.
I want to know how you lived in Chicago and win Miss Florida. How does that work?
Well, I did. Like you said, I won some state contests because I wanted to eventually win Miss Continental, which I never did, which is very sad, but I never sort of won that. I was sort of the eternal first runner-up in that contest. And the other big contest besides Miss Continental was Miss Florida. Now, in order to win that, every girl, actually, that's won that has been from Florida. So I thought the same thing you did. I was like, well, I can't really enter that because I'm not from Florida. But Jim Flint, who is the owner of the Baton, said, listen, why don't we just send in an application and, you know, see what they say. And they accepted my application, and because I think I had won 4 or 5 state titles, they allowed me to enter, and I won, which was shocking, but I won.
I've read you're the first transsexual to have played a transsexual character on television. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And could you talk about that?
Sure. The first role was on a TV movie by Disney called Romy and Michelle... Behind the Velvet Rope, which is a prequel to the Romy and Michelle movie, you know, with Lisa Kudrow and Mira Sorvino.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer who wrote the original Romy and Michelle wrote this prequel, and she put a transsexual character in, and it was so funny. It was very odd because I haven't played a lot of transsexual characters in the theater. In fact, I think I've played like 3, maybe 2. And it was never out of choice. It just sort of happened that way. And at the time, I had been auditioning for so much television and so much film, and I'd never gotten anything. And so I was sort of tired of it, you know, tired of going down and auditioning and not getting anything. It was very disconcerting. So I told my agent at the time, who called me about this role, and I said, listen, I'm not going to do this because I'm not going to get it because I never get anything, and I'm tired of doing this. And she said, listen, I really want you to come down and put yourself on tape and just, it's an hour out of your day, just come down and do it. Get a blonde wig and come down and do it. So I did it, and I really think the reason I got it was because I didn't really want to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There was sort of nothing at stake for me. Because I was like, well, I'm never going to get this, so it's not going to matter, and who cares? So I'll just go down there and read, and then I'll go home and have a Coca-Cola. And I did it, and they sent the tape out to L.A., and they liked it, and they sort of flew me out here. And it was it was really an incredible experience.
I've got the issue of The Advocate where you were on the cover. Very nice.
Oh, my gosh, that was the one. That was me and Greg, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun show. That was a show that was written by Larry Kramer called Just Say No, which was a terrific experience. He and I got to be really, really good friends, and working with Greg was just great. That was a really, God, I've forgotten about that. That was a really fun experience. I got to play Nancy Reagan. That was exciting.
That's bizarre.
Yes, it was bizarre. In more ways than one. Yes, it was bizarre.
Tell me about some of your more favorite TV and movie roles.
Well, I have to say that the last thing I just did was a pilot for a television show called Nurses. In it, I played another transgender character. And the woman who played my mother was Lynn Redgrave. So I got to spend 2 days acting with Lynn Redgrave. So the experience of sort of doing that with her was pretty much life-changing, I have to say. She's an amazing, amazing actor, and she was so generous and so kind. It was really a profound, I know this sounds a little silly, but it was really a profound experience working with someone like that. You know, someone that huge, you sort of expect to be a gigantic poo head, but she was just fantastic. So that was really an extraordinary experience, I have to say.
Which TV role has gotten you the most attention?
You know, probably the one I did on Grey's Anatomy, I think. Only because that was, you know, that show is just huge. I mean, the show, it's, everybody in the world watches that darn thing. And I really had no idea. I mean, I knew it was huge. But like you, I don't watch a lot of television. And if I do, it's I Love Lucy, really. That's pretty much the only thing I watch. And I really had no idea. I mean, we live in a suburb of California that is, I'm telling you, we're in the middle of horse country out here. People ride their horses to the local Denny's. I mean, it's crazy. So it's a beautiful town, but I mean, we are way out. And we were, my partner, Chris Ann, and I were at the grain and feed store. Don't ask me why, but we were at the grain and feed store. And the woman behind the counter recognized me at the grain and feed store. So, I mean, I knew something had happened when the woman sort of said, "Are you Alexandra Billings?" And I went, "Oh, my God, I'm recognized in the grain and feed store. What the hell is happening?"
I understand you just missed the excitement on that show involving T.R. Knight.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. That particular incident, which was mortifying to everyone, actually happened the day after I left. So, yes, I missed it by 24 hours, thank God. They're very lucky I wasn't on the set when that happened, to be honest with you. I have a real, how do I put this? I'm a stickler for responsibility. And I'm also a true believer in consequences. It's about consequences for your actions.
But that actor went to bigotry rehab.
Yes, didn't he just? Isn't that lovely? Bigotry rehab, which I think is just terrific. And yes, he's just a whole new person now, I'm certain of it. The whole thing is so insane. It's so ridiculous. And, you know, quite frankly, there's no cure for racism. There's no cure for homophobia. There's no cure for stupidity. You know, there's no treatment that you can take for that kind of stuff. That's about how you're raised. That's about what kind of parental guidance you had. And that's about social graces. And obviously, there are some people on the planet that don't have any of those. And there's no place you can go to sort of regain your self-worth when it comes to that kind of stuff. You either have it, you know, like Rose says in Gypsy, you either got it or you ain't. And that's it.
I was going to ask you about that. Tell me about playing Mama Rose in Gypsy.
Oh, my dear. That was a dream come true, honestly. I'd like to do it again because I have a feeling I was a bit too young. I would like to do it again. I would like to do it one more time. But the experience in and of itself was just, I mean, to sing that kind of music. Every time I opened my mouth and sang, you know, "You'll be swe-," I mean, when the words came out of my mouth, I couldn't believe what was happening to me. So to sing that kind of score and to be involved in that kind of musical, which by the way, has one of the best books ever written for a musical was just, it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. Yeah, that was really fun. Really fun.
Some people can get a thrill knitting sweaters and sitting still. That's okay for some people of 105. Some people can thrive and bloom living life in a living room. That's perfect for some people who don't know they're alive. But I at least gotta try. When I think of all the sights that I gotta see, yet all the places I gotta play, all the things that I gotta be in, come on, Papa, what do you say? Some people can be content playing bingo and paying rent. That's PG for some people, for some humdrum people to be. But some people ain't me.
Of course, that was the song Some People from Gypsy. You'll find that on Alexandra's first album, which was called Being Alive, which was released in 2000.
Well, why did you choose Being Alive as the title track?
That's a good question. Why did we choose that? I think that was a sort of committee vote. That was myself and my producer, Ralph Lampkin, who's a terrific guy, an amazing guy, and has been with me for 20-something years. The first album I did, I wanted it to be very positive. I wanted it to be, you know, uplifting. So I think that's how we arrived. That was a long time ago. We might have just done Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe. I don't remember, really.
When you wrote me to accept doing this interview, you wrote that you thought your first two CDs were very difficult for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, look, let's be honest. I'm not a great singer. I'm just not. I don't have a fabulous... You know, I'm not Barbara Streisand. I'm not Christina Aguilera. I don't have that kind of voice. I like performing, you know. I like to sing in front of people. That I love to do. And so when I got in the studio, you know, there was sort of no one there.
No give back.
That's right, yes. That's exactly right. I was sort of singing to Ralph and the two people in the booth, you know. It was very odd. It was a very lonely experience for me. It was hard for me. It's hard for me to do.
From your album, The Story Goes On, I really love the duet you did with Steven Rader on The Grass Is Always Greener.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was fun. He's also been a really, really good friend of mine for a very long time. And when we first got the song, he said, well, I guess I'll play the housewife and you play the big star. And I said, oh, no, let's switch it because that'll be much more fun and much more interesting for both of us. So it was great because I got to come out in a big blue moo-moo with a shower cap on my head and little cat's eye glasses. And he got to dress up and look fantastic. So it was really fun to do. It was really fun.
I love that, of course, he comes across as gay in the song. You can have my husband. I've had your husband.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we wanted to sort of mess with the genders. You know, I love to do that. I love to screw with people's heads so they have to listen. They listen to the song, and then a couple minutes later they go, what? What'd you say? Huh?
I'll bet your friends are all celebrities. That's wonderful.
What's so wonderful? You can make a pot roast. That's wonderful.
What's so wonderful? First you brown an onion. The public wants your autograph.
Oy, that's wonderful.
Oy, what's so wonderful? You raised a teenage daughter. That's wonderful. What's so wonderful? Now she's got her hoo-ha pierced off.
The grass is always greener on somebody else's estate. That's wonderful.
What's so wonderful? Oh, bet you dance with circuit boys.
That's really, really wonderful.
What's so wonderful? They were born in 1985. I can see you planning picnics. That's wonderful.
What's so wonderful? Eating at the White House. That's wonderful.
What's so wonderful? Bush, Dick, colon,
hey.
Your husband.
Say,
oh, everyone's a victim of this ducky little dictum. The grass is always greener in someone else's yard. It's hard.
That song, The Grass is Always Greener, was written by Kander and Ebb from the Broadway show Woman of the Year.
Also from that album, tell me about I'm Not My Mother.
That particular album was really a theatrical, how do I explain it, a theatrical show, because that was recorded live. We put the show together that had a through line of sort of, it was sort of an autobiographical feel to it. And the I'm Not My Mother song sort of harkened back to the very top of the show, where I actually talk about my mother and her passing and how much she gave me and how much I learned from her. And then I just wanted to sort of wrap it up at the end by saying, well, even with all my neuroses and with my constant cleaning habits and with my touch of OCD and my paranoia about myself and my life, I realized as much as I'm not like her, I'm pretty much the exact same thing.
I'm an easygoing person, very calm and very quiet. And so, all right. All right. All right already! But sometimes sensitive like any other. If you'd rather not upset me or provoke a riot, don't ever tell me that I'm like my mother. I'm not my mother. My mother believes the world is a wicked place. The world is just waiting there to get you, and it will get you. The question is when. The answer is soon. I'm not my mother, not like her at all. I live in a friendly world where everything is looking up all over. Just look all over. Well, don't look too close, and not over there. She says, you know that I'm behind you all the way, but do you know the way at all? She says, you know I'm not the type to push you, but of course I don't butt in. But you're about to fall. It's your future. Forget I said anything. I'm not my mother. I don't like to talk. I'm more of a listener who wants to hear everything you tell me. So go on, tell me. But before you tell me, I know exactly what you were about to say. In a word, the idea that I turn out to be in any way like someone who throughout her life has always done her best to drive me crazy is a absurd. As I grow wiser and nearer my personal best, and just a bit older but much better dressed, I look in the mirror and what my mother.
What do you think is a good definition of transgender?
Oh, my goodness. Wowee. Which one I think is a good... You know, it's funny because I remember the first time I heard that word, which was only about maybe 10 years ago, and I was in the library, and I was getting music for something, for some show. And I heard that word from two people that were sitting reading something. I think they were college kids doing research or something. And I heard blah, 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 transgender. And I went, what the heck are they talking about? So I actually had to go ask people what it meant. And for me, I guess, I really hated it when I first heard it. And now, just in the last 4 or 5 years, I've come to really like it because I think that it means... It's sort of an umbrella, which I think is great, which includes transsexuals, pre-op and post-op, transvestites, you know, all kind, our whole community now has one unified word. So I think it's basically a big trans umbrella. It's a transbrella, so to speak.
I like that it doesn't draw lines. It doesn't put people into camps, pre-op, post-op, stealth, whatever. It's just how they self-identify.
That's right. That's the reason I like it, too. I agree with you. Yes.
Have you run into transgender stereotypes in auditioning for acting roles?
Well, how do you mean? Like, what do you mean exactly?
Like, are they all victim parts?
Most of them are, yes. But I don't, I say no to those, and so does my agent. Billy Miller's, I'm very lucky to have him. He's not only a great manager, he's a great advocate for my community, and he gets it. He understands it. So he says no to a lot of that stuff. It's just very difficult for me to play the transsexual murderer or the transsexual with a deep, dark secret or the transsexual who can't get out of a box, or, you know what I mean?
And who doesn't live through the episode.
That's right. Yes. You know, for the past 3 years, I've been playing a lot of transsexuals in the hospital. I'm sort of the queen of the transsexual in the hospital right now. You got a hospital? You need a transsexual? Call me. I can do it in my sleep. So I'm a little, you know, I'm sort of at the point now where I'm like, well, I really want to do some other things. That would be really nice.
Say, it seems like the characters for transgendered folks are maybe 20 years behind gay and lesbian folks in writing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're at the very, very tip of the iceberg here. And I have to say, and I've said this a million times, but I'm going to say it again. I have to say that I lay a lot of the blame at our feet. I believe that it is our community's fault and our community's problem. Because you have to remember that, and I think you probably know this, a lot of transsexuals, be they transvestites or pre or post-op, whatever, a lot of them, when they decide to transition or start to transition, go into hiding, you know? They change their name, they change their identity, they lie about their past, even to their spouses, and they sort of move to some obscure place in Idaho or something and set up a camp and live their life. And so the problem is that Hollywood, and most everybody, has no frame of reference because we are silent. We have decided not to come out of the closet. The reason the gay and lesbian movement is so far ahead of us is because I believe they're a lot braver.
And they come out of the closet and stay out of the closet.
That's exactly correct. And they now have said, look, I mean, look at T.R. Knight. He said, I'm gay. I mean, he was forced out of the closet because of some idiocy that happened. But since he's out, you know, he said, this is the way I am, and that's it, and I'm going to continue acting, and I'm an actor, and this is just a part of my life. It's not all of who I am, but this is who I am. So now Hollywood can look at him and say, oh, that's what a gay man is, you know, as well as these other things, but that's what a gay man is. They can look at Ellen DeGeneres and say, oh, that's what a gay woman is. Oh, I see. But who do they have to look at for the transgender community? RuPaul? I mean, RuPaul was great, but that's all they have. It's RuPaul and Milton Berle in the 1950s. That's all they got.
That's a different thing altogether, though.
Yeah, it is a different thing altogether, that's right. But do you know what I mean? That's the only thing they understand, either a man, a straight man in a dress with funny teeth and a crazy walk, or a six-foot drag queen. That's all they understand, because those are the only people that are out, that are speaking, that have a voice.
Yeah.
So they write these characters, and they write from what they know.
I was going to comment that it seems like for many transgendered people, it's like a journey with closets at both ends.
How do you mean?
Well, when they're first starting to self-identify, they might be a man, if it's a man becoming a woman. They would be a man at work, but in their social life, they might be a woman. So
mm-hmm.
they're still in the closet, part of their life. And then they transition, and then they decide, oh, I was never a man. I'm in stealth.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. And so, I mean, I understand how incredibly difficult the journey is and how unbelievably confusing it is. But my point is that, like you said, to go from closet to closet doesn't help anybody.
It's got to do anything. It's got to drive the activists crazy.
Well, it drives me crazy. I don't know if I'm an activist, but it certainly drives me crazy. I get real sick and tired of it, especially when I hear some of my own community saying, well, that's not fair. You can't portray us like that. We're not like that. And I want to turn to them and go, well, then open your freaking mouth, for the love of Christ. Stop sitting in your house and knitting and complaining. I don't want to hear you. Then stand up and say something. Come out at work. Come out when you start dating somebody. Be proud of who you are. Look at the journey you've had, for Christ's sake.